another endearingly shambolic podcast from WeDigPodcasts.com.
Hi, we dig music, and because of this we've kept the music in our podcast at a low background level because we believe that you should support the artist by buying their records and going to their gigs. If you want to hear the songs in full, we've made Spotify playlists of all available music featured in each episode, which you can find on WeDigPodcasts.com. You can also join in the discussion on Facebook and Twitter by searching at WeDigMusicPcast. Finally, if you dig what you're hearing, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, write a review if possible, and tell all your friends that you think would enjoy it. Anyway, enough of my yakking. On with the podcast.
Welcome to We Dig Music. This month we are going to be doing the letter O.
Nice work.
And possibly quite a bit of the letter C.
Yes.
So you know the score by now. We take a small band and a big band and ramble on for ages about both of them and many, many tangents.
Led Zeppelin was ages ago.
Ramble on. Terrible. So this month we are going to be talking about
Colin and Ian. Because you haven't introduced us.
I haven't, sorry.
Who the fuck are these people?
Hello, I'm Tracy. And with me, as always, are my comrades and co-hosts, Ian.
Hello.
And Colin.
Hello, fucking amateurs.
I know. It's because I haven't got the crib sheet.
We've only been doing it for nearly 2 years, Tracy.
I know, and this is the first time I've ever done the intro without that crib sheet in my hand, that terribly dog-eared, ripped up
Well, that's why
sheet.
I haven't brought it, and because I've got a new laptop and I keep it in my old laptop case.
And so the first time I do it off record, he's like, yeah, a fuck-up.
Well, we've probably lost listeners as a result.
Probably.
Who are we talking about then?
We're talking about Swedish prog rockers Opeth.
Yay!
And Mancunian Bellens. Oasis.
A bit, yay.
Mancunian's yeah. Beatles plagiarists.
And real people.
Let's get into that, especially that later.
Yes.
Yes, let's. So, Ian, please tell us something about Opeth.
Yes.
Opeth.
Let me tell you about one of my favourite bands in the world, and they should also be your favourite band. Progressive metal / progressive rock band from Stockholm.
Prog.
They were formed in 1989. Michael Akerfeldt, who is definitely the leader of Opeth, didn't join until 1990.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
No, because he just came in as like lead vocalist at some other point.
Right. So I'm assuming Tracy doesn't know. Do you know what happened? There was this other guy whose name I've completely forgotten because he's not important at all. Formed Opeth with this. He got the band completely going.
David Isberg.
Yes, David Isberg. Mm-hmm. Recruited Michael Akerfeldt, at which point the rest of his band all left. So, yeah, he left as well, and Michael Akerfeldt was sort of standing there going, I suppose it's my band now then.
Yep, okay. I'll just do this then.
But it means that he's not responsible for the name.
Yes. Now, the name always, to me, sounds like Opus with a lisp.
Yeah. Like, is there any... I didn't look But is there a discussion of what it means?
It's from, I don't know if there is on Wikipedia.
There isn't.
No, just, okay. So the it's from a fantasy book.
Okay.
And it's
a Swedish book.
I don't know. I would
there's a lot of
possibly.
Like and then, Scandinavian metal bands named after like Lord of the Rings
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah,
it's not from Lord of the Rings. I know that much, but yeah. it's from a fantasy book, and it's actually misspelled.
Ah,
they changed the spelling a bit, and then that's what the name is, and it just kept the name.
I don't think it's a bad name. I
no,
quite like
no,
it.
It's a nice name, Opus.
The logo. Have you ever noticed that? So they've got this ornate O with yes. all the squiggly bits.
Looks a bit like a Q.
Well, at work at Christmas, everybody had got chocolates and stuff, and somebody had brought in a box of After Eights, and the After Eight logo on each of the individual little packets, even though it's an eight, looks quite a lot like the Opeth logo.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
After Opeth.
Yes.
After. Oh, you should never eat anything after Opeth.
No, because then you'll turn into a gremlin.
Yes.
Or you'll sound like a gremlin originally, and then you'll just do melodic singing later on.
There's always
well,
been.
You'll start off sounding yes. like you'll start off sounding like a mogwai, and then you'll turn into a gremlin.
I feel like he's one of those. But like, this is going to be a bit of a rambling and unstructured one, isn't it?
It is.
I can tell,
is,
but
because
they have progressed from being a reasonably, like, not massively straightforward, but definitely a lot more straightforward than they are death metal band.
They were kind of technical death metal.
Yeah, yeah. Days, they were always, like, proggy elements and, like, clean vocals and acoustics.
Yeah.
But it has gradually expanded. I'm not going to say it's based on his friendship with Stephen Wilson.
Well, no, because there were a lot of elements to it before that.
I think he's just maybe, like, allowed himself.
Are they great friends then?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know in that footage you were showing me earlier, he mentioned Steve Wilson.
Well, yeah, that's a fantastic quote. I should have played that to you.
We discussed it in the Stephen Wilson and Porcupine Tree episode.
Did
at
we?
Great length.
Yeah. Oh, apparently, there's a quote from Michael Akerfeldt quoting Stephen Wilson, saying that Stephen Wilson said, "You are in a, like Opeth is an amazing band. Without you, Porcupine Tree wouldn't exist." And apparently, his response was, "Go fuck yourself, Stephen."
Yeah, they're basically the prog twins, aren't they?
They
are. There should be like a prog buddy movie made about Stephen Wilson.
I've seen a video of them like record shopping together, and it's like fucking great.
It's like, oh, have you got the 17th album by Camel?
Yeah, it's like, you know, the Patrick Stewart and Saria McKellen things where they're just
yes.
out together doing things.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the prog version of that.
Yeah.
So it's like that Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon thing where they're just
having conversations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
It could be just like that.
That would be ace.
That dry, that.
I would genuinely love to watch that programme. Prog Friends.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
Prends.
Prends.
Yeah.
Michael and Stephen, please do that. I want that to happen so much.
Have you heard?
I hadn't listened to Michael Akerfeldt before, and before you got here earlier, Colin, Ian was showing me examples of his onstage banter, and he's really genuinely funny. He's
yes.
really
like
warm.
He comes across as such a fucking
yeah.
lovely dude, and he's like, it totally cuts across the music, but in such a good way.
Yes, because the music's very, very, very serious.
Yeah, and they're playing these amazingly ornate songs, and then every now and again he'll be like, "Hello, we're the only jazz funk fusions." Band from Stockholm.
Well, I actually, can I start off with, because we haven't had much of an intro, we've rambled
yeah,
loads
yeah,
already, and I've got this quote about them. I don't know where I got it from. I think it was from
the internet.
Yeah, but I think it was from the Rate Your Music website. And this is how it summed them up. It said they offer the perfect blend of Scandinavian metal and 70s progressive rock. They've consistently produced some of the best metal music of the last 15 years.
Yep.
In
yep.
Michael Akerfeldt, the band are blessed with a fantastic songwriter, but also a rare vocalist possessed with both a beautiful singing voice and the ability to provide brutal, extreme vocals where necessary.
Yeah.
Not like that. Way better.
Yeah.
That was shit.
And it says, although their music adopts the quiet, loud formula, which suits them perfectly, the band have never been afraid to experiment with their chosen style, gradually allowing more progressive influences over time. Extreme metal purists may scoff at Opeth's relatively accessible approach.
But extreme metal purists should fuck off if they think Opeth aren't good.
While some older prog fans are put off by the band's death metal roots. But when it comes to mixing progressive metal progressive music with metal, few bands do it better.
Absolutely.
But no argument at all.
That is... So there's I think that was a fairly good overview for someone that's never heard them before.
Yeah, because they are not afraid to experiment. Like, when you go from like Heritage, which is a pretty proggy metal.
Well, that was their first album with no death metal element to it at all. There was no monster voice. On it, and it was. That could have come out of, 1974.
I've got to say, Watershed is the one I listen to the least. Well, I'm the least familiar with.
That's what I was about to say. They've released something like 14 albums altogether. Mm. Their album Watershed, I don't think people realised that at the time, but I think he titled it as "This is a watershed between the death metal and the more straight ahead prog."
Because like he did Heritage after that, and fuck me, that is such a good album, but it's difficult.
Yes.
I love it, but it is difficult.
A challenging listen.
Now, I only listened to the songs on the podcast playlist for this, so...
That was... what was the one that...
Was it the tree thingy one?
Yes. No, it's the one with the flute solo over that fucking amazing riff.
Yes, but I can't remember what it's called.
No, me too. I tend to stick the album. That's really annoying, because I love that album so much. Hang on a second. Heritage, it is the one with the tree. It is. Why is it not? There it is. It is Famine.
Famine, that's it. It was like track two or three on the album.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because
I thought the flute solo would put you off, but it is over such a fucking good riff.
Well, if you'd like to hear what I'd written for that track, actually.
Yeah, go on, then.
I said it starts really well. I love the sparse piano.
Yep.
And there's that beautiful voice again. I do love his voice.
He's got such a fucking... It's a weird...
It's quite ethereal.
It reminds me...
There we go.
Weirdly, of Paul Young.
But it is. Paul Young.
Mm. You know that song where Smokey sings?
Yeah, yeah.
Some of his intonation is similar to that.
Okay.
Fucking hell. You're right.
Right. But...
I was not expecting Paul Young to come up in a discussion about Opeth, but yeah.
It took me ages because I was like, who the fuck does he remind me of? He really reminds me of someone. And then that was on the radio. I was like, oh!
But then there's a lot of sort of crossover with prog bands and 80s pop type stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you've got like bands like It Bites.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you've got Genesis.
Yeah.
I used to quite like It Bites.
I've seen them at a prog festival.
I was only about 13 or so when they were popular.
That was your prog days.
They were fucking terrible.
My friend Ralph is heavily involved with It Bites.
Really?
Yeah.
They're seen as a really credible prog band, aren't they?
They're a bit of a throwaway pop band then, really.
I think they
did they do that Calling All the Heroes?
Possibly.
But like Marillion have done big pop things and they're...
Yeah,
Kaylee.
And what was that follow-up, the lavender blue one?
I don't know. Don't know its name, but yeah, I know the
Dilly
one.
Dilly Dilly.
Well, Another Brick in the Wall, that's a pop song.
Yeah.
Prog bands have always been able to be like, what? Let's write a song that people will buy. Yeah, done.
But coming back to that song I was talking about, that's full-on fucking freeform prog.
That's when they've got more and more jazz influence on Heritage. Like, absolutely.
But that riff that comes in, I wasn't expecting the flute. But that riff is just so good with the Hammond organ and...
Yeah.
See, I wished it had stayed at the Stark piano stage for a lot longer, and then the drums and the guitar kicked in at around the 3-minute mark, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
You only listened to the playlist, you didn't...
Yeah, I only listened to the playlist, I'm afraid.
I've been absolutely hammering Opeth. We're recording 3 episodes today, so we've had 6 bands to listen to.
Mm.
And I'm fairly certain Opeth are the one I've listened to the most over the last few months.
Guess which one I've listened to the most?
I think it might be Oasis. But anyway...
We'll get into that later.
Yeah. So I first heard Opeth, it would be 2001... Where it was an edited version of The Drapery Falls.
Yeah, yeah.
Was on a free Kerrang! CD. Which that was a track on Blackwater Park,
which is astonishing, that album.
A lot of people, possibly myself included, I think it's my favourite.
It is. It's people's favourite in general, isn't it? Yeah,
it's fucking amazing. It's such a good album. That is definitely still in there, death metal as well as prog.
Yes, period. It's a good mix.
But it's
that one and Ghost Reveries are very,
and it's such
on
an
the cusp.
Atmospheric. I don't know if it's because there's another album called Ghost Reveries, but whereas you listen to Cannibal Corpse or someone like that, and the horror imagery that you get from that is very, it is, you know,
like Cannibal Corpse or a slasher movie.
Yeah, slasher movie, that kind of thing. And you've got other, you know, Slayer, it's satanic demons and that kind of thing. Opeth, it's like ghost stories.
Yeah.
Now, this has no bearing on the lyrics at all, because I realised recently that I don't listen to lyrics anymore. I'll notice if there's a really, really good one or a really, really bad one. But other than that, I don't really care either way about lyrics. I just want the whole piece all together. And there was a TV show on Netflix last year that was fucking brilliant. I keep getting the title wrong.
House on Haunted Hill.
It could be the soundtrack to that. It's gothic ghost
stories.
It's
the same
stories,
kind of like horror. Yeah, it tells stories about things and they're a bit creepy.
Yeah.
And dramatic.
Yeah, and it's like there's fog and trees and old falling down houses is what appears in my head.
Yeah.
In fact, the other day I was coming out of work and I was going to put the Nail Bomb record on for the previous episode, and it was really, really foggy, and I was like, well, I've got to put Opeth on then.
Yeah. The whole point of Ghost Reveries, the album, was that Michael Akerfeldt wanted to write an album about, like, Satanism and sorcery and stuff like that, but from an adult perspective.
Right, yeah.
So that's what that's about, the whole album. Uh-huh. Which is really, really interesting.
Yeah, because Still Life, which was the one before Blackwater Park, I think?
I believe so, yes.
So this was before Stephen Wilson's involvement, because Stephen Wilson was first working with them on Blackwater Park.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't been on every album since then, but he's worked with them on a lot of them.
Yeah.
And Still Life is a concept album about, it's basically sort of anti-Christian themes. It's about a village where everybody's very, very religious, and this guy's, it's all a bit vague, but the dude gets outcast from the village, or cast out from the village. He would be an outcast, that's a bit more grammatically correct.
Uh-huh.
And has to leave his girlfriend behind, and then he comes back later on and something goes wrong, I don't know exactly what, and he ends up murdering everybody.
Okay.
But it's because they were all horrible, horrible Christians. That's the gist I got from it. But it's a fucking great album. I'd never really listened to anything pre-Blackwater Park until recently. The first couple, Orchid,
My Arms, Your Hearse.
My Arms, Your Hearse.
Which is such a good song, like, title. I love that title.
It really reminds me of stuff like My Dying Bride.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of doomy goth metal kind of stuff that I was listening to a little bit in the late 90s. But it's got that kind... It's a little bit more straightforward, but it's still got a lot of the prog elements.
Yeah.
Like Orchid, I was expecting from everything that I read for it to be a fairly straight death metal album, but it's still got the melodic vocals as well as the death growls.
Yeah, that's what I was meaning. It's like, in terms of Opeth albums, it's very straightforward.
Yes.
But in terms of other people's albums, it's not very straightforward.
Yes.
So I'm guessing I must have known who they were for at least the last couple of years, because Ian, you used to play them a lot on Box of Rock.
There's no use to. I play them a lot, all the time.
And generally in that last section, the Ian Indulges Himself section, you'll play out on
which
a long
is Ian's
open
old radio show.
Mm. Yeah, but that's when he allows himself to play a longer track.
Yes,
is that because you needed a shit?
No, it's not. Never, ever. It's because I was like, you know what, this is my show, I can do whatever the hell I want.
And it's nice the way you play them longer and usually sort of slower tempo ones toward the end. And so I'd have known who they were, because you'd have been going on about them a lot. And I think it's around the same time when Colin lent me a Porcupine Tree album, which I didn't get on with terribly well, I must admit. I tried. And I'm
progophobia, isn't it?
I know. Maybe I'll get over it. I'm starting to get into Brian Eno.
I think we're slowly vaccinating you with small doses of prog.
I think I was invited to go and see Opeth with you a couple of years ago, but I didn't.
Yeah, me and E went.
Yeah.
So you should have come.
I've never seen
him
live.
Did I go?
No, I don't think you did.
You'd know if you went.
What was that gig I went to with you where there was that girl and the cello?
Was that Jarbo?
Yeah, it was Jarbo.
Right,
wasn't
Opeth. Yeah, we haven't supported Opeth. I would honestly still have a boner now if we'd supported
Opeth. Jarbo was in Swans.
He was she was doing a weird folky thing where she sang out of key all the time, apart from the one song that she sang beautifully, and I was like,
my favourite thing.
The fuck? Yeah, like she was being deliberately shit, and I was very annoyed by her.
But you know, I mean, what surprised me with Opeth is the contrast of style, actually, because when I was listening to Deliverance, and I think we're probably going to talk about this song in some detail.
Because it's just a masterpiece.
Because I thought there were two singers. I was like, oh, hello, because there's a beautiful voice here, and now there's this growly voice. But are the two singers or is
that kind of... No, mostly...
There isn't on that track, but on... So Deliverance and Damnation was originally supposed to be a double album.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They got released as two separate albums. So Deliverance is a sort of quite melodic-y chilled one with not much heavy bits, and Damnation is the heavy side of it, basically. Stephen Wilson does some vocals...
But not the death growling stuff.
No.
So it was the death growling vocals that surprised me on Deliverance. I'm like, oh my God, is that the same vocalist? And it really, really surprised me.
Yep.
But that song, actually, it's got an amazing, amazing opening. If you squint your ears...
Damnation is the mellow one. Deliverance is the heavy one.
Which sounds the wrong way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you squint your ears, which is our new favourite phrase, the opening to Deliverance sounds like My Bloody Valentine's Made Me Realise.
Okay, I can kind of... there was definitely at some point I was listening where I thought this is a bit MBV, but I can't remember which one it was.
But so the opening just sounded like them crashing guitar sequence at the beginning of Made Me Realise. And so that grabbed my attention straight away. I like the middle wiggy bits slightly less.
Who had, 20-ish minutes is when Tracy was going to say wigging first.
Yeah, I've got an...
genuinely surprised.
Yeah, but the slow, quiet sections are really lovely. And there's a section in there about halfway through where the vocals are overlaid.
Yeah.
And it's hypnotic. And then there's this, cool drum break... breakdown after it, and the drums in that are just amazing throughout. It's like some kind of mad syncopated triplets going on.
Is that Axe on drums?
It is not. He hadn't joined at that point. It is Martin Lopez, the original drummer,
right?
Who's also fucking great.
What, one of the Martins? Because Martin Mendez, who's the bass player,
still there,
has been there since 1997.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's also Peter Lindgren on guitar for that one as well.
But the two main constants are Michael Ackerfeldt and Martin Mendez.
Yes.
Oh, God, those drums.
But yeah. I know Martin Lopez was a fucking phenomenal drummer as well. Just not as good as Axe.
But I believe you both wanted to talk about the riff in that song.
Yes.
9 minutes 40 onwards, but then that's when the... melodica type bit is, and then it fucking kicks in at 10 minutes
with that riff.
I have
such a good riff.
I have written on my notes in massive capital letters, taking up two lines, that riff at the end of Damnation.
Yep.
Which will be edited. You're going to be hearing it now in the background.
Deliverance.
Yeah, it's such a good riff.
Yes.
Such a good riff.
It is.
And but you can't mouth the riff. You can't. Because it's a very tied into the drums kind of riff. I can tap along with it. I know where the turnarounds are.
Yeah.
But only after the first one.
Yeah, you've got it. But it lasts for about 4 minutes on the track. So
you
get into the groove, to quote Madonna.
But it takes a couple of turnarounds before you'll get into it. But it's very rewarding when you are there.
It's fucking ace. I love it. I tend to only listen to Deliverance and Damnation as like got one album now.
Yeah.
Yeah, the quiet one. So is it Damnation was the quieter one?
Yeah, with
that's the
with window
way
pane.
Around, man.
Well, I haven't listened to that one because it wasn't on the playlist. I think it,
you've listened to Windowpane.
Yes, which
the
you opened
one
with,
on the playlist.
Which you opened oh, with, and I'm wondering if you deliberately did that to draw me in a little.
Well, no, Tracy, because you didn't like it when we played it to you a year ago.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Also, you hated it when I played it to you when we did Porcupine Tree.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was the one
oh,
where, in the Porcupine Tree episode, where we played it to you and got you to point out exactly where you didn't like it.
That was it.
Yep, it was the first bent note.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, Windowpane's beautiful. I can't quite work out that time signature. Is it 5/4, 6/4? You can't quite count it.
I think it's, the turnaround is... I think it's a 3/4, and then the turnaround's a bit of an odd one.
Mm, tricky to play, it's got to be. So okay. I turned into Yoda there.
Yeah, it's 3/4. It's 3/4, but there's chord changes in weird places.
But it's so yeah. It's so relaxing, so smooth, so beautiful.
That whole album is.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, there's a tenuous link here to the
excellent.
Band we're going to be discussing later. Oasis and they are ripped off.
They're going to link it to the Pastels.
No. Later in this very episode. So Oasis ripped off a Liverpool 90s band called The Real People. I'll be talking about it at length later.
Yeah, we'll be getting into
and
that.
And they have a song called Windowpane. So there we are.
That's tenuous.
It's very
yeah.
tenuous.
I'm going to say, without even listening to it, that it is not even a tenth as good as this one.
It's
incredibly so different. It's just too different. You couldn't compare them.
I could.
But,
and I would.
So as we got through that playlist, and there was the track later on, Sorceress, and I was thinking, you know, I was wondering how long before wizards and stuff came into this.
Yeah, no, that is... But that fucking riff, again!
Fairly far into their career, to be honest.
Yeah,
about,
yeah.
About 20 years-ish.
Yeah, that was the last album.
Do you know, what is
it's
it
a
about...
fucking monster
what,
of an album.
What is it about metal, though, that lends itself so much to tie-ins with fantasy novels?
Because you're writing about mystical things.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, basically, if you think about it, a lot of people that are like... metal.
I'm going to blame Sabbath.
A fucking nerds, like
basically.
Us.
Well, Led Zepp as well. I mean, they were massively into Lords of the Rings.
Yeah,
and
yeah. I can't blame Led Zeppelin for anything original, for the most part.
They didn't do anything original.
Plagiarised a lot of shit. So, whereas Sabbath, pretty original.
Yes.
So
yeah. Well, actually, here's a tie-in, actually. There was a band called Sabbat.
Yes.
Not to be confused with Sabbath. And they had a concept album based on a 1983 book.
Is it Sabbat?
Sabbat. No, but they had this...
Sorry, I was referencing that Abath video.
They had an album called Dreamweaver, which was a concept album based on a...
Isn't that a song in Wayne's World?
Yes.
It was based on a book called The Way of Weird by an author called Brian Bates.
Yes.
And it's an Anglo-Saxon sorcerer. In fact, my little brother had the album and he liked it so much he wanted to find out about the book, The Way of Weird.
Yeah.
And he couldn't track it down anywhere, and pre-internet days again. And he contacted the band and they said, oh, right, yeah, write to the... They gave me the author's contact details, I think, and he got a signed copy of the book.
That's
from
awesome.
The author.
That's cool.
And I read it as well, and it's absolutely enchanting. And it just made me think
literally.
Of that. And, yeah, literally. But it just made me wonder what it was about metal and fantasy and concept albums of that kind.
Don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it's just the fact that metal
cool.
is predominantly
everyone,
made by nerds.
Everyone likes a bit of escapism every
yeah.
now and again. Like you can't constantly be all fucking writing about napalm death subject matters, like, you know, politics and
yeah.
oppression and shit like that. You've got to just fucking rock out and think about some wizards every now and again.
I think that is a good motto for life.
I mean, shit, look at Lee Dorian, right? He went from napalm death to cathedral.
To cathedral.
Yeah.
Politics to wizards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In one step.
I think that might be my new motto for life. You've
politics.
You've got to rock out and think about wizards sometimes.
Yeah, I do it all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes I listen to Manowar and think about metal.
Yes.
Because while
you
think
you
that they would
metal.
Be writing about wizards, they're actually just writing about metal and how great metal is all the time.
Occasionally metal wizards.
Yes. But more metal than wizards.
Yes.
Whereas Opeth... just like, but like I feel like they're Levian wizards rather than not like fucking Gandalf wizards. I think they're like Anton LaVey wizards.
They're not like Gandalf, they're more like Saruman.
Yes, yeah. Basically.
They are the baddie wizards.
They're there in their fucking basements doing rituals and stuff. That's what they're doing. That's what Opeth's wizards do. They've got there's a lot of candles involved and not a lot of wands.
Yes.
But, I mean, they mix it up, though, don't they? Because that track on the playlist, The Twilight Is My Robe, when it started, I thought it was going to be more of just a death metal song. And then it kind of goes back to the prog noodling after.
It's obviously
about
definitely
a minute.
Nothing about wizards, is it? Twilight Is My Robe.
It could be
about streaking. Is this Michael Ackerfeld's song about streaking? Why are you wearing no clothes? The Twilight Is My Robe.
But I really admire the way they mix the styles, even if I'm less of a fan of the proggy element. Like,
and they do it so well.
They're just interesting. They're very interesting.
I mean, that live one you put on the playlist, The Drapery Falls.
Oh, the one with the orchestra as well. Yeah. Jesus Christ, that's the best version of that song.
It's amazing for a live performance. You would think it's recorded.
Opeth are the band I saw have a power cut on stage. And then the amps came back on and he went, okay, right, turned round. They had a little bit of a discussion and then came back in exactly where they had stopped.
Oh, wow.
Exactly, in the middle of a 15-minute long song. Like, they are seriously
they had no time
good.
To start
probably
it,
in
yeah.
the middle of a probably in the middle of a 6-4 bar.
Yes, I think, I'm pretty sure it was, they're just really technically very good.
We're doing this for a live album, so we're going to have to edit that bit in later.
I actually wrote down, oh God, this song is very intricate, isn't it? And that's my new word for noodling when I don't want to be mean.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
Intricate.
Well, I think you're making great progress there, Tracy.
progression, yeah.
I feel like you need to learn to, bracket your, put it in a box. This is noodling, this is intricate, this is technical.
This is beautiful.
There's aimless jamming, which is sometimes great.
Yeah.
But when Opeth have got guitar solo, they're still very composed.
Yes.
Even though relatively recently, they've not done that much writing before they've got into the studio.
Which
they've
is amazing.
Put a lot of it together in a really short space of time when they're in the studio, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, apparently Michael Ackerfeld has never had lessons.
Yeah,
like
really?
His musical.
Well, he's a guitarist. Most of us haven't.
Yeah, but someone who's using all these fucking amazing, jazzy sounding chord inversions and stuff like that, and writing solos, he writes solos.
Yeah.
He's just too good. Basically, if I'm ever going to take a solo, I'll try and sound as much like Michael Ackerfeld as possible.
If I'm ever going to take a solo, I'm more likely to sound like Kurt Cobain.
I don't sound like Michael Ackerfeld. Like, the one time I did, that was probably about eight takes worth of solo. No, it was me deliberately trying to sound like Ackerfeld. Let's learn some jazz scales. Okay, cool.
there's quite a lot of Michael Ackerfeld memes on the internet. There's a prog community.
Michael Ackerfeld.
Michael Ackerfeld's on Facebook. And one of the best things, because there's a lot of this whole, there's a lot of the fan base that don't like when the death metal vocals stopped.
Yes.
And it went more proggy.
Mm.
And one of the best thing that I've seen is they've reappropriated Donald Trump's red cap with Make America Great Again. So that the MAGA thing to be Make Ackerfeld Growl Again. Which is a much better use because it's not Nazi and horrible and cunty.
I like that.
Have you seen the picture of Opeth sitting on an alligator?
No.
That's I got sent that by my mate Alex. He was like, it's just a meme that says, never mind that, here's Opeth sitting on an alligator. It's obviously a stuffed alligator or something, and just all of them just sat there.
Excellent.
Because they're all dudes in bands apart from a really small minority, which is... Like, they write really serious music, but they themselves do not take themselves seriously.
Oh, okay.
They'd be really fucking boring if they did.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think from listening to the music they would be very serious, and that's why I was surprised when you showed me him talking in between songs.
That's another thing that just makes me love them so much.
It made me warm to them much more, actually.
Because you look at him, when he was...
And it's why I've skipped any of the negative bits I've written down in my notes.
Tell us some.
It's not negative about them as such. It's just the, this is all getting a bit much now kind of things.
Just tell us which songs they were.
Yeah.
Heir Apparent.
Which was on...
That's Ghost Rev. No, it's not Ghost Reveries.
Relatively early, isn't it?
Oh, God damn. Probably, yes. Me neither.
And Cusp of Eternity as well.
Cusp, oh, I really like that one.
Yeah, well, it's very epic. It was a really epic finish to that playlist. But
that's
it,
from
but
the
it was
most
a,
proggy album
but it was a
done,
bit,
though.
It was a bit much for me.
But that's on... what the fuck's it called? Completely blanked and I've turned my page over.
Pale
Communion.
Yes, which is just the proggiest.
But it's at the same time as the proggiest, it was one where they were consciously trying to make it as melodic as possible.
Oh,
as
okay.
Well.
Yeah. Now, Demon of the Fall, was that actually on the same album as The Drapery Falls?
Yes, I think
it because...
Oh, I think that was on Ghost Reveries.
Really? Because I think...
No, it was not. I only put one track from Ghost Reveries on and it was...
Right, it's not...
It was one of the mellow ones.
It's not on Blackwater.
I just thought Demon of the Fall kind of sounded a little bit like a reprise of The Drapery Falls.
Isn't that what sound engineers called Marquis Smith?
What?
The Demon of the Fall. Fucking hell, he's singing into the drum mic again. Oh, he's turned the bass amp off.
No, it's from My Arms, Your Hearse.
Okay, so
actually
brilliant.
Quite a lot before it.
Yeah. Ah, right. I think let's ruin both of your days by talking about Oasis.
Hang on, wait. I need to now find out which track it was from Ghost Reveries that I put on there, because it's my favourite Michael Akerfeldt solo.
Okay.
No, don't worry about it. This has taken ages.
Was it Hours of...
Hours of Wealth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
There we go.
Well, actually, that was the shortest one on the playlist.
Look at them putting it off.
Parts of it were nice. I mean, the strings and the keyboards. It was an odd intro, but the strings and keyboards that came in after that were really nice. And then...
When it drops down
and the piano drops away, everything but the piano drops away, it was really arresting, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked that. And because it was so short, I was actually quite surprised when it ended. I was like, oh, but is there not 10 minutes more?
Yeah,
of
no,
this?
It's a beautiful track and it doesn't outstay its welcome.
Tracy, you've become a prog fan.
Also, it's got that fucking solo in it and that's just so beautiful. Oh, my God.
I liked that one, actually. I did like that one, so... On the whole, positive for me.
Wow.
Good. Well
I
done.
Really wasn't expecting that.
No,
I'm very pleasantly surprised.
I'm
must have,
also
surprised. Must have put
surprised.
Me in a good mood the we're, day I we're, listened to them.
We're proud of you, Tracy. Well
yep.
Right.
Don't hold out too much hope for me liking one of yours, though.
I know.
It's not that I'm a snob or anything, it's just that your music's way less evolved than mine.
Talking of music that's not very evolved,
we must.
Knuckle dragging.
Yep.
Let's talk about Oasis. Oasis were an English rock band formed in Manchester in 1991. They are Liam Gallagher, or Liam Utter-fucking-wanker-Gallagher, on vocals and tambourine. Don't fucking mention tambourine. That doesn't count as an instrument. Fuck off.
No, and he doesn't even play it very well.
It does. Primal Scream had someone whose only role was playing tambourine.
And drug dealer. Paul Bonehead Arthurs on guitar, Paul Gwigsy McGuigan, bass guitar, Tony McCarroll, first of all, on drums, and Noel Gallagher on lead guitar and vocals.
Lead cunt.
Lead guitar.
Noel's less of a cunt than Liam.
He is. Like, I don't mind him.
Yeah. So we'll definitely get into that in a bit. But It was a band formed by Liam and his mates while his older brother Noel was off on tour with In Spiral Carpets.
Yeah, wasn't he a roadie?
He was there.
In Spiral Carpets,
guitar tech and roadie.
Yeah.
Came back, went and saw his brother's band rehearsing and thought, well, it's sort of all right, but your songs are shit.
So they sound like BDI then?
Basically. So he joined the band and essentially took over and made them very, 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 very successful.
Mm. And made people say things like, that's what a rock star's like.
Yeah.
Whereas actually he's just a rich cunt.
Yes, absolutely. You'll get no argument from me at all on that. So they were signed to Creation Records, home of My Bloody Valentine and Teenage Fan Club.
If only My Bloody Valentine had successfully ruined that record label.
Yeah.
Successfully bankrupted it.
They might have saved the world.
It's all Kevin Shields.
Well, Oasis.
Kevin Shields could have saved the world.
Oasis saved the label.
He still could. But you know
has
what?
He got a fucking time machine? No.
If he did have a time machine, he'd take even longer to make an album because he'd just go back so he could redo it over and over.
He'd just collect more and more chinchillas.
Like the George Lucas.
More chinchillas.
Imagine if he could George Lucas Loveless.
Do you know what? They weren't actually signed to Creation.
Weren't they?
They were signed to Sony and just licensed to Creation.
Oh, right. Why didn't you fucking tell us this when we were doing the My Bloody Valentine episode?
Oh, you mean so there was no way that...
Because I hadn't bothered researching that at that point. Well, actually I had, because it actually did, I've got this information from the excellent Creation book, My Magpie Eyes Are Hungry for Christ.
Oh, I've got that. I haven't read it yet.
Which is by David Kavanagh, who sadly died just last month. Very sad news indeed.
Or a couple of months ago when you listened to this.
Yeah, it was in December. Quite sudden news. I don't really know many details around it. Anyway, I'll move on.
How about moving on to...
No, I'm getting back to it.
No, so, I'm enjoying this segue. Just keep it tangented over here, please.
So, no one knew about it at the time. The reason they couldn't actually sign to Creation is because McGee realised they were going to be huge and he knew he wanted to take them to America. But a deal that they'd got at the time was... They'd had a tie-in with this American label, SBK, that whereby anything that Creation put out in America had to be put out by SBK. It was in their contract. He didn't want to let them have Oasis. They fucked up previous American
Oasis. Oh, it was Oasis. I thought we were talking about Valentine.
I'm talking about Oasis still.
You didn't make that clear.
Sorry, I'm talking about Oasis. So he didn't want to let SBK have them because he thought he'd fuck them up. He thought he could do better for them. So they signed to Sony and were licensed in the UK to Creation. But they didn't want this to be known because they wanted it to seem more credible
that they
were a Creation band.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Because they made a really big thing about them being on Creation Records.
Mm.
Yeah.
But no, they had no legitimate credibility.
So when I was younger and didn't know better... No, I used to really like Oasis when I was a kid. I remember I saw Live Forever, which was their third single, on the chart show.
Yeah.
Which I used to watch every Saturday morning. And bought Definitely Maybe when it came out a couple of weeks later on cassette from More Than Music in Tamworth.
Yeah.
Ian's going to yawn all the way through this particular episode.
Sleepy.
I started learning guitar a year later, and Oasis are culturally significant, whether you like them or not, because of the amount of people that they got playing guitar.
Badly.
It doesn't matter, it's easy. They played, you know, if...
You know what, I'm genuinely proud of the fact that I do not know how to play any Oasis songs on guitar.
But I... And loads of other guitarists would not necessarily have carried on with playing guitar if I'd have got into Iron Maiden, first of all. Loads of people would have given up because the riffs are so much harder to play. Whereas...
That was the first band I started learning.
I know it was. But not everybody would have carried on with that. It's like punk rock.
I was just about to say, this is kind of like a buzzcocks.
It's literally the only thing about them that's like punk rock.
It is. It is absolutely. But it's the... Britpop, in a way, was a bit like punk rock because it was showing kids, you could do it yourself. It was all open chords, which is fucking easy to play.
Yeah. Mm.
It's stayed in my playing style since then. I can play a lot more fucking complicated stuff now, but I use loads of open chords because I like the way they sound. But I learned that originally. I started learning guitar in about 95, and I bought an Oasis chord songbook as one of the first things that I got. And I know it was 95 because it had got songs from the first two Oasis albums, but nothing later in there.
Mm.
And, Noel Gallagher's guitar solos are all really basic pentatonic type stuff.
This is why I went lead guitar.
Yeah.
Look, I've heard rhythm films feels more complicated than all of his solos.
Yeah.
Yes.
But they serve the song.
They do.
If there was suddenly, in the middle of Don't Look Back in Anger, there was a fucking Yngwie Malmsteen-style tapping solo, it probably wouldn't fit. Although, actually, I want to edit one in now because that would amuse me greatly.
Just a couple of sweeps in there.
Yes, they're fucking divisive. And
I mean, you know what? I'm going to have to admit that when they came out, I did like them.
Ah!
So
I didn't.
I know you wouldn't.
I mean, I've
literally never been on the fence about this one.
You were full on metal at that time, though, weren't you? Would let nothing seep in that wasn't.
No, see, I was. If anything, they were one of the bands that made me become more insular.
Right, yeah.
College at that point, and like there were two or three metalheads in college at the start, but they were a little bit more like grungy metalheads and stuff like that. And then this came out, and they all got into that. And they're like, yeah, this is the new thing. And I'm like, I don't fucking want the new thing. I want the good thing.
I mean, well, I lived in Preston at the time, so it had an immediacy. Well, it had an immediacy because it was so close to where we were.
Yeah.
I knew people who knew them. Supersonic was being played on Radio 1 on the evening session a lot. I remember seeing the debut of Supersonic on The Word.
First song that I ever played live on stage
on
guitar was me and my cousin Tom, who I mentioned the Nirvana bit last episode. We were guesting on stage with my dad and his stepdad, my uncle, with their band. We did Good Riddance by Green Day with me playing guitar and him singing. And then we did Supersonic with both of us playing guitar and him singing.
Yeah. I mean, I remember dancing to them down, you know, the student disco. We'd play for something like Rock and Roll Star or Live Forever, and then play I Am the Walrus straight after it.
Yeah.
You know, which you know is one of the songs that they covered on.
Yeah, they did it as a B-side.
Yeah, it was like one of the ones they played at that first gig where McGee saw them and signed them.
It wasn't the first
gig that McGee saw them.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, apparently, I mean, this is according to the legend. McGee changes his story every time you ask him. Apparently,
he's very much a print the legend man. Isn't
he? Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I loved them at the time, but Britpop kind of hit at just the right time when I was at uni. You know, impressionable 20-something.
Well, for me, Britpop, it was almost like I had two sides to me.
Mm.
I got the Green Day side and the Nirvana sort of stuff. But then I was also really into Britpop. Me and my sister kept swapping whose favourite was Oasis or Blur, because we both liked both.
Yeah.
Overall, I think Pulp was my favourite.
Me too, actually. I was going to say I prefer Pulp over either of them.
Time has been kindest to Pulp
I think out of all of them, Jarvis Cocker is the best lyricist.
Well, Pulp
and is not a cunt.
And Pulp are already a proper formed band. I mean, you've got to realise.
Oh, they were going from the early 80s.
Yeah, you've got to realise.
Imagine
by the time,
late 70s.
They were on their ninth album or something by the time Definitely Maybe came out.
Yes.
It's just that no one knew about them, myself included at that time, I've got to say.
The early stuff really isn't anywhere near as good. I've got a lot of it.
You know, and I saw Pulp live in 95. I've seen Oasis live.
That rhymed.
Yeah.
I never saw Oasis live.
Well, I think I saw them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I don't remember a lot. It was a free festival in Preston, in Avenham Park, one of the Heineken festivals.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I was there, but I don't remember fuck all about it.
Most of your festival stories seem to be like that.
Yeah.
So I've looked at the lineup 20 years later and realised that this band was on the bill.
I don't remember
seeing them, but I might have done.
Yeah, so I think I was there.
I think, yes, Liam Gallagher is an absolute fucking bellend.
Like, he is the worst kind of human being.
But I think, do you think that it's mainly from him, or do you think it's mainly from a lot of the fans who are utter fucking cunts?
I feel like he's led by example.
Right, okay.
Like, because, yeah. Like, you know, he's cheated on his wife.
Yeah.
All of them. Both of them. You know. He's like, he gets into fights. He is his fans.
It was a huge tie-in about like he basically, with lad culture.
It's, yeah, like, it's the lad thing, isn't it? Which is
kind of if you go out and some fucking cunt in a parka starts a fight
violence.
With you, it could be Liam Gallagher. You know, he could go off and form a band and be the next Liam Gallagher.
Yeah.
Basically, the only difference is that he's got money.
Yeah.
Literally it. Hasn't helped him become a better person. He's still a fucking vile,
yeah.
Vile, ignorant cunt. And I hate him.
I've got a lot of time for his brother, though. Noel is... Well, he's a fuck of a lot more intelligent, for a start.
Yes, I think he's aware... Like, he's a lot more self-aware.
I think he's still a prick.
Like, I think if I was like, dude, you just fucking ripped off a load of songs, didn't you? He'd be like, yeah.
Oh, he's very open with that.
So, you know,
You couldn't not be. I mean, fucking cigarettes and alcohol is Get It On by T-Rex.
But I bet if Liam had written it, he wouldn't admit it.
No.
Well, I mean, yeah,
if he had written it, it'd sound like fucking Little James off one of the later albums.
I mean, can we get into this and the ripping off and the influences?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's well documented.
Well, it's very well documented. And I've banged on about it in previous episodes every time someone mentions Oasis, and I will mention a band called The Real People. Now, I was aware of The Real People to a certain degree before I'd heard of Oasis. I've got a Real People demo tape from around 91, 92 because a friend at uni was from Liverpool and was a mate of theirs. And when you listen to them demos and you listen to early Oasis, it is documented. I mean, Noel first met Tony Griffiths from The Real People while Noel was roadieing for the Inspirals. And he contacted Griffiths to help him record a demo. So they went over to Liverpool because they had an 8-track. Tony and Chris Griffiths helped them to do this demo, which was most of the songs that would eventually feature on Definitely Maybe. They had some input into the writing and recording process, which has been fully acknowledged by Oasis since. Tony Griffiths is credited with vocals on Supersonic. Chris Griffiths co-wrote Rocking Chair with Noel in 93. Yeah, as a B-side to Roll With It. And Chris also claimed to have written the lyrics for Columbia with Liam only doing the chorus part.
So he didn't even rip other bands off, they just got other bands to write their shit for
them.
No,
but they did. If the Real People are claiming to have written all these songs, then it's the Real People that have fucking ripped off loads of them.
Oh, well, the Real People were a real Beatles rip-off.
Yes. Yeah,
hugely.
So it's not like, oh, they've stolen that off me, but I've already stolen it off
somebody else. Well,
that's
even fucking worse then, isn't it? Because you're like
actually.
A third-generation copy.
But then there's this weird bit where it isn't one a collaboration, but there's a Real People song called Feel the Pain, which predates the Oasis Don't Go Away on Be Here Now by some years. And Don't Go Away has got the lyrics, Don't Go Away, Say That You'll Stay Forever and a Day, entirely lifted from Feel the Pain.
My daughter is 2.5 years old. She could have written those lyrics. That's not an achievement.
No.
I like the song. It's on Be Here Now, which is fairly well documented as what I consider the best Oasis album, which no one else in the world does, which is hilarious.
Actually, you know, Stuart.
But that is the laziest fucking lyric ever, and I love
but
that song.
All of Oasis's lyrics are lazy.
Pretty much.
Really lazy.
Pretty much. But that's
in
one
order
of the
to
worst.
Get this to happen, you've got to do that. Do this. Spread the word. Do some peace thing.
You know what?
Yeah.
On that Live Forever documentary. What was that documentary?
Live Forever? The one about Oasis?
No, the Supersonic one.
Supersonic, sorry.
Yeah. Liam was apparently hit on the head with a hammer by someone at school.
It was Ian.
Yep.
And he said, and no, but
with
he said,
with my time travel.
No, he said, musically, it all clicked from that point on. So, Ian, can you go back in time and not do that?
Someone hitting Liam on the head with a hammer made him understand music.
Yeah, apparently he wasn't interested in music.
Fucking didn't, did it?
Yeah, well, someone needs to go.
Didn't. It didn't make him a good singer. Didn't
someone
make
needs
him a fucking
him
person
again.
Who can play a tambourine in time. Didn't make him someone that wasn't a cunt. Hit him fucking harder.
The one talking about how bad the lyrics are.
Yes.
I really don't get, because Noel writes most of the lyrics.
Yeah.
Mm.
Noel Gallagher has a really fucking good way with words in interviews.
Just not in lyrics.
But his lyrics are fucking terrible.
Maybe that's deliberate. Maybe he writes them as lowest common denominator so that everyone gets it.
I think there is a little bit of that in there. I think they want to write songs that connect with
twats.
Not necessarily music fans, the fucking postman down.
Someone on Twitter described their lyrics. This was Phil on Twitter. Phil82 or something like that. And he said...
Oh, if you've got that wrong, he's going to be really pissed off.
He's going to be really pissed off. Sorry,
it's Phil. Phil82.5.
He described their lyrics as nursery rhymes reinvented as football chants.
Yeah, that's basically it.
No, absolutely.
It's really simplistic shit.
Yeah.
I think Noel Gallagher is... His best use of the English language is when he's insulting people in an interview. Which is... He called Jack White... He said he looks like Zorro on donuts.
Yeah.
Which is fucking brilliant. There's a really, really famous quote when he was talking about Liam, where he's rude, arrogant, intimidating and lazy. He's the angriest man you'll ever meet. He's like a man with a fork in a world of soup.
Yep.
That's fucking Shakespeare level.
Yeah.
Do you know, when asked if the other members of the band were expendable apart from him and Liam, Noel actually said, even Liam's expendable. What can I say? I'm a cunt.
Well, no, that's the thing, right? He wasn't even the best singer in the band.
Yeah, Noel's a way better vocalist than Liam's.
I much prefer Noel singing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, every time.
They harmonise really well. There's certain bits where both of them are harmonised. I think that there's a thing with family members in bands.
Yeah.
Where brothers and sisters.
Yeah, there's some probably like innate genetic connection.
Exactly,
like,
tend to harmonise.
Like really anytime you've got a band with brothers in, like Van Halen, fucking Pantera.
Yeah.
You know, to reference some good bands with siblings in. Even Hanson.
Yes. But then another quote, this is probably one of my favourite ones. Liam got a Rolex, I got a Rolls Royce, when they're talking about what they spent their money on, which is brilliant, because I can't drive and Liam can't tell the time. Because, when they got their first load of money, Noel bought a customised 1967 Mark II Jaguar convertible and a swimming pool, but he can't drive or swim.
Nice.
Which is ace.
Well, you're saying about brothers, actually. Debbie Turner, who was she was in a Manchester band called Sister Lovers.
Which is who they were supporting at King Tut's World.
Yeah, so she kind of invited them onto that lineup because she knew Oasis. She's from Manchester. They shared a rehearsal space with them in the basement of the Manchester Boardwalk, a now closed down music venue, very sadly closed down. And she reckons that what Alan McGee saw in them was another Jesus and Mary chain, because this was just after he'd had a lot of success with
them.
They
used to fight a lot.
Yeah,
like the
and Reapers, he said a surly singer and his brother who he fights all the time, a big barrage of guitar sounds with pop songs underneath.
And they only thought, why don't we produce them properly this time?
We're back to the Mary Chain production.
It's a different barrage, though, isn't it? Like,
it is.
Jesus and Mary Chain is a good barrage.
Yeah,
it's a barrage that I want to
listen
to.
Oh, no, it's the other way around for me.
You know, and the Reed brothers have two eyebrows each.
Not like one between them. Just continues.
Joined
the
of the eyebrow.
That's why they fight so much, because they can't actually move away from each other because they're conjoined at the eyebrow.
One of their fights was actually...
It's the one on the ferry.
Yeah, the one on the ferry. It was immortalised in an NME interview, actually, because the guy, I don't know who was doing that.
Guy.
Yeah.
Sample that. That's a good loop.
I do. I don't know who was doing that interview. But the journalist printed this argument verbatim. He'd gone there to interview them. They started kicking off and having an argument about what had gone on their first European gig in Amsterdam, where they'd all actually got deported and sent home for fighting on the ferry.
They caused a massive fight on the ferry before they'd even got there.
Yeah.
Got deported.
See, this is what I mean. It's just like fucking lads on tour, isn't it?
It is, totally.
The thing is, McGee loved this at the time, though, because...
Noel
rang up to tell McGee what had happened. The gig isn't going ahead because the rest of the dickheads have got sent home.
It's like a fucking episode of EastEnders, isn't it?
And McGee just went, oh, brilliant, punk rock. But no, so they had this interview in NME, and the interview opened with Liam shouting at Noel, "Let's fucking go then, you dick. Let's have a fucking fight."
It wasn't just immortalised in the NME. They released the tape as a single.
Did they? I didn't know that.
Fierce Panda Records released it as Wibbling Rivalry. And the band name on the single was O**Cis. And it got to, I think it got to like in the top 40.
Wow.
And it's just this tape of this argument between Noel and Liam. And I did have a copy years ago on tape. It was taped off someone else.
Yeah.
And it is very, very funny.
So you know the gig that this famous King Tut's gig,
gig that they got signed for.
Glasgow, yeah. So it was the 31st of May 1993 at King Tut's Wah Wah Hut.
I was 11.
The brilliantly known venue. I always wanted to go there.
I've never been there.
I don't know.
I think so.
Cool.
I don't know though. So Alan McGee was actually there to see one of his creation signings, 18 Wheeler. I liked 18 Wheeler. And also he was friends with Debbie Turner, who was in the band Sister Love. And so Oasis weren't meant to be on the bill, but Turner had kind of invited them onto it. And
they played a shorter set.
And the other support band Boyfriend had said, "We'll play shorter sets to let them play," because they'd forgotten to tell the promoter that they'd invited another band onto it. And so McGee loved them right from the start. But what I thought was, I found a brilliant story in the Magpie Eyes book. He'd actually met up there with Gerard Love of Teenage Fan Club in the bar.
There's something else I can blame Teenage Fan Club for, then.
No, you'll be on their side.
Oh, okay.
And he said, "Oh, yeah." I listened from the bar. I didn't see what all the fuss was about. So, yeah, I knew there was a reason I loved Gerard Love. Actually, you know how I said in the last episode Kurt Cobain called Teenage Fan Club the best band in the world?
Yeah.
Well, Oasis got signed to Creation, that Teenage Fan Club were on at the time, and Oasis at that point said, yeah, they're the second best band in the world, actually.
Yes.
I don't think they were saying it as a response. I think it was a parallel quote.
Yeah.
Themselves saying they're the second best band in the world. Not
after us.
No, Kurt, you're wrong, they're the second best band. It was a completely separate thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
There's a difference between thinking your band is the best band in the world and telling everyone else.
Yeah.
Because one of them is just confidence, the other one is being a cunt.
Yeah.
I mean, they were in the same studio. When Oasis were recording Be Here Now, Fan Club were in the same studio.
Best album.
Working on songs from Northern Britain. So.
Yeah.
They'd have known each other at the time.
Yeah. Mm. So, with how big they were, their Nebworth gigs, I think we probably need to mention that.
I think we probably do.
August 1996, they had a ballot that you had to register for.
Right.
Ian's probably going to start snoring in a minute. There was a you had to phone up and register for these tickets, and 4% of the UK population applied for tickets.
Yeah.
They played
to a quarter of a million people.
Quarter of a million people over 2 days, and in addition to that, there were 7,000 people on the guest list, which is fucking ridiculous. And there were only 10 arrests made over the weekend, which, with what we know about Oasis fans...
And they were all in the band.
With what we know about Oasis fans, that's fucking lazy police work.
Yeah.
Because there was way more fucking crime than that.
100% more fights than that. Also, if they arrested everyone that did that stupid fucking pointy hand in the air dance...
While wearing a bucket hat.
Yes.
So I've mentioned this a couple of times. Be Here Now is that Oasis's third album.
Which is what songs?
Do You Know What I Mean? Don't Go Away? Stand By Me?
Okay.
All Around the World.
All Around the World.
Oh, God, no, that's another one of those songs
where
he's going to make a better day.
Hold on, I'll get to that. Right. Right, Be Here Now is...
It's such a shame that you can't translate into a podcast eye-rolling, because the amount of shared eye-rolls between me and Ian is much louder than anything Colin is saying.
Shut the fuck up.
The deafening sound of eye-rolling.
So, B Be Here Now was the first record I ever queued up before a record shop opened to buy. It was released weirdly.
We've all
Thursday.
Made mistakes, Colin.
But it's known as being there. Loads of people say it was a terrible album.
Right.
Including Oasis fans. They're all wrong. It was basically, it was the height of their absolutely fucking coked up, you know, overblown,
yeah,
ridiculous phase. One of the criticisms about it is when you take loads of cocaine, apparently it affects your hearing so that you can't hear treble.
Oh.
Now, okay. I don't take loads of cocaine or any, but I've never noticed that.
Alan McGee and Noel Gallagher had your share.
Yeah, absolutely. They had most people's share. I've never noticed the treble, but that's because my hearing's fucked anyway, mainly from various drummers that I've played with over the years. So I was thinking about this the other day. I probably better apologise to everybody listening to the podcast as I mix these. These might be really fucking overbearingly trebly. Sorry about that.
No, don't worry.
I wouldn't notice.
You know, I can hear all the frequencies. I listen and tell you.
Good.
You know, you said no one else agrees with you that Be Here Now...
Very few do.
You know Stuart, Stuart Harris?
Yeah, yeah.
He says Be Here Now is their favourite. Always thought that.
Good. I think part of why I like it is the time it came out in my life. I was 15 years old. I'd, like, 2 weeks after this album was released, got my first ever girlfriend. So, you know, it's...
Okay.
It's from the mopey teenager, oh, I'm never going to get a girlfriend, suddenly getting to... Oh, that's pretty good.
So that's what blowjobs are.
Yes.
And to going around just with a swagger album. And it is, it's pure swagger.
It is overlong, and that could be fixed by cutting... All Around the World and All Around the World Reprise.
Definitely.
Which are both fucking terrible off the album entirely.
All Around the World is one of them songs that's got stuck in my head in the last few fucking weeks, though. I mean, do you know
only
what?
Your own fault. I didn't put it on the playlist.
I've solved this
because
doing any research on Oasis.
Because do you know what? I actually thought, I'm going to go and listen to all of the albums after that because I hadn't listened to them before. So I have listened to their entire fucking back catalogue in the last month.
Loser.
And I wished I hadn't bothered.
It's entirely forgettable.
Join me in my happy world of not listening to her.
I didn't bother with... There's a couple of singles that I don't mind later on. Importance of Being Earnest is alright.
I like the video.
Importance of Being Idle.
I love the video to that because I love Reese Evans.
That's the one where
they're trying to be the Kinks, right?
Also, Liam Gallagher doesn't sing on it, does he?
No, it's another Noel one, yeah.
Although that opening vocal line is horrible because it's so high
it
and
is
reedy
slightly
and
out
like
of his
that.
Range.
I like that.
But you'd have thought if all that was... The fact that we're all saying Noel Gallagher's way better than Liam, you'd have thought Noel Gallagher's high-flying birds wouldn't be as shit as they are.
They're better than BDI, though.
Oh, that's
the thing. He's trying to do something.
Your cat's litter tray is better than BDI.
Yeah.
And I did actually buy that High Flying Birds album, the first one.
Did you?
Yeah, I don't know. And then I thought I'd give him a chance.
Were you on heroin?
I deliberately listened to one track since. And it was like, this isn't bad. Like, it's not terrible. It's better than Oasis.
Yeah. There was one single that I can't remember the name of. It was some ridiculous psychedelic title like The Ballad of the All-Seeing Eye or something,
yeah,
that I thought was all right. It was kind of similar to the stuff Noel did with the Chemical Brothers.
Which was actually quite
good.
Which
was really good, yeah.
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 He basically did two remakes of Tomorrow Never Knows.
Yeah, basically. When I was watching that Supersonic documentary, it mentioned a band, a Manchester band from around the same time called the Yah Yahs, and I'd forgotten all about them. I knew the drummer of that band, was at uni with him, saw them live a few times around that time. If ever there was a band that should have been bigger, that should have got recognised, they were it.
I think like, Oasis ruined a lot of things for people.
Yeah, I mean, the bassist of the Yah Yahs filled in after Griggsy left, and he also played with Noel's High Flying Birds as well later on.
Okay.
I think he still plays with him now, in fact. But yeah, the Yah Yahs were brilliant.
Cool. I think we're probably done there, aren't we?
Honestly, I've been trying to signal the end since the start.
You told us that episode was finished before we'd... recorded anything.
Yeah.
You're like, and then I'll put Opeth in there.
I mean, I guess the question is, though, the last question, do you think they would ever have a reunion?
I fucking hope not, but I imagine once Liam sticks all of his fucking money up his nose, probably.
People say it would be absolutely huge, but I think it would destroy them and destroy what they had.
Okay, put it this way. If it was totally up to Liam and the rest of them, they absolutely would.
Whereas it's actually up to Noel, and I think it wouldn't.
I think Noel Gallagher has enough money.
If anything, that makes me respect him more.
Oh, absolutely. I've got a lot of respect for Noel. I think he's a prick, but I think he's...
I think he knows he's a prick as well. Absolutely. That's the thing, whereas Liam doesn't.
Yeah.
He thinks he's great, as does a lot of other people, which is just...
But for that quote about him not being able to drive and Liam not being able to swim to tell the time, it's fucking brilliant.
I mean, honestly, I like the knowing that he said something about maybe in future doing a solo album, then noticing that really pissed Liam off, so he did it in every single other interview for the rest of the tour. Like, that kind of epic level dickishness, I like.
Yeah, I can dig that. Cool. So, it's the letter P next time. We've got
Porcupine tree again.
No, it's. I think we're going to be
Primus.
One of our more schizophrenic episodes.
Yeah, I think this is one of the biggest clashes.
There's
going to
be probably not very many people on board with both bands next month. So we're going to be talking about the Pastels and Pantera. Whoa!
Fuck, I knew I was meant to be in something.
We've been We Dig Music. Thanks for listening. Bye.
You've got to just fucking rock out and think about some wizards every now and again.